Hello, guys, and welcome back to Two Ghost Girls. It's Jory.
Hello, hello, and it's Abby. I'm coming to you live from quarantine in Herzliya. What's going on, Jory? I miss you. It's crazy. I just saw you last week.
I know, it's literally been a week, and I feel like it's been years. And I love how it's like, I feel like every time it's like a different quarantine. I feel like this has happened a few times where you're in quarantine while recording. It makes perfect sense.
I fly a lot. That's life. Yeah, I fly a lot to New York, and then Israel requires quarantine.
Yeah.
I'm actually not supposed to be in quarantine right now, even it was the last day, and I went to get tested, and I waited in line for an hour and a half. Only for them to say that they don't have any tests left. And then, like, when people tried to talk to them, they just, like, slammed the door in their faces and they were like, bye. And I did not know what to do with myself. So instead, I made a TikTok about it because I just.
Classic Israel. Classic freaking Israel. I mean, classic Israel, but classic everywhere because everywhere's like, that could definitely happen anywhere. I'm so sorry. That sucks.
Yes. I don't know about that because I had a really good experience in New York, but the truth is I booked 2 days in advance to get that experience. So
yeah, and like that's true.
The guy was super nice and he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry you had to wait. I waited for 10 minutes. Like I've waited hours for things in Israel. So I was like, what are you talking about? I didn't even wait. So that is why I'm still in quarantine.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm trying definitely to not in quarantine. I've been like very I don't know. Everyone's like, Jory, you're going to get it. I'm like, we're still the lucky few who haven't gotten it. Like, so I'm just kind of hanging in there, still being smart. But I'm kind of like, my friend yesterday was just like, I had it and it was 5 days. And all I felt like it was like a little cold. Like, it felt like nothing. So I'm like, why am I trying to, do you know what I mean? Like, why am I trying to like not live my life for a cold? But then again, it's contagious cold.
I think it's so. It's for the clout. At this point, like, we made it 2 years without the Rona. So, like, now yeah, it's, like, yeah. Just, like, telling people, like, oh, I didn't have it yet. But right now, this conversation is jinxing it. And
it's jinxing. Yeah,
just, like,
Hashem, please be with us. We don't want it. We want to be the few that get out of this alive. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But really, though, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind quarantine. I actually sometimes prefer it just, like, shutting everything off. It kind of feels like an extended Shabbat. Where I could like be on my phone and on my laptop. Like I just started watching a show that you recommended in quarantine called 20 somethings.
Love. Oh my God. Oh my God. Yay. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you're watching it. Okay. So what do you think?
I am obsessed with the show. I didn't even like reality TV show before like Corona happened. And then I just really saw the appeal of it and it just got more entertaining. But like, let's say reality TV shows like Tiger King are just like kind of crazy out of this world people that you're never going to meet. But 20 somethings, like all the people on it are so relatable. They're going through the exact same shit we are, you know, trying to figure out their careers, trying to figure out their love life and like relying on friendships and there's a little drama in the show, but for the most part, like it's pretty wholesome. Like I was expecting it to be like insane, like too hot to handle vibes, but that's really not. This is just like people living their lives. For people who don't know the show, you want to give a little, did I just kind of describe it? I don't know.
Well, no, it's like people that haven't moved to, they're these 20 something people, 6-7 of them live in a house in Austin. They want to get out of their city and try a new fun city, which is Austin, Texas. They move there. There's actually 2 Jews in the show, which is super cool. They're both boys. They're both super cute. So, and I think they both wear Jewish star necklaces, if I'm not mistaken.
That's so weird because, I mean, like only one of them at the beginning mentions that he's Jewish. The other one doesn't mention at all. And they don't wear their Jewish star necklaces on the show. So I'm like, hello, we want some representation.
I know. I love it. So they just like live their life and it's just kind of like, it's so relatable. I just think it's a TV show showing my life. I think that's what it is. And just seeing how, you know, you want someone, you want to go on a date, you want to go on a date, but then someone ghosts you and just seeing how hurt someone else is, but like also how I've also been hurt that way just like makes me feel like comforted that we're all in this together. Just people hooking up and living life and partying and school and work and not getting a job when you're trying to. So it's like, it's just relatable. It's not like crazy drama, but it's entertaining.
Like you think that things are going to work out for them, but it doesn't work out for everyone. like, okay, spoilers. We're going to give some spoilers. Bruce was like my favorite character. And
he's
like
so hot. Yeah.
I mean, he's a real person character, you know. He's just, oh, so my type. I've been getting really into like country music, Southern boys. I don't know what's up with me. Like, I'm in Israel obsessing over cowboys. But anyway, he was my favorite. And he ended up getting the job. And he's like, you know what? Like, the dream job that he wanted, he's like, I'm not going to take it because I miss my family. And I was like, did he just leave the show? Like, they actually, I guess, like,
you know, he just left the show.
Like, yeah. And then I'm like,
dude, what are you doing? Stay off the clout.
He could just go back to his family like later. It was so weird.
Yeah, I agree. But then the cute Jewish guy came in. Yeah, okay, regardless, okay. I feel like we need to watch the show. Okay. For everyone, they need to watch the show. I think it's a little hard when you haven't watched it. But that's a good
stuff. Sorry for the spoilers. Anyway, if we haven't, we definitely hype them up. So if you haven't watched already, go on Netflix. That's our number one recommendation for now. So that's what I've been up to in quarantine.
Perfect. Sweet. You said something with a boy earlier, or to me. What's going on with that?
It was just a guy that I went on a couple of dates with, and like we really vibed. Like, you know, he was attractive and like hardworking and chill and like super fit and everything. Like really, like the full package. And how we left it off before I left for the States, we're like, okay, like we both appreciate each other as people, but we're not feeling the chemistry. And like, I think that's something that me and you discussed in like previous podcasts where we were like, what if he's the full package, but there's no chemistry there? Like, what do you do? And we said like only 3 dates, but I didn't want to let it go. So, I don't know. He came to visit me in quarantine, and like, I don't know, I felt like it was like the same vibes. And then like later this week, he was like, he called me and he was like, listen, like, I don't think I'm feeling it. And I was like, okay, I'm on the same page. I always, which was like kind of, I get where he's coming from, but I don't know. I like to feel things out first because you never know. So I was like to him, if you ever feel like, you know, like you fucked up, like you made a mistake, like you have my number, text me. He's like, that's really cool of you to say. Because, you know, we were on the same page and like it's good that we didn't drag things out because I do have a tendency of doing that because I do want things to work.
Yes. I'm glad. I'm glad you're optimistic, but I'm also glad that like it was both like understood, like you both under like mutual.
It was mutual. I didn't even stop there. I was like to him, also, like, you know, maybe like we'll just become friends and it'll turn into a friends to lovers trope. I was ridiculous.
Oh, my God, Abs.
I was like, no, you don't understand. He's like really cute. So I wanted it to happen, but whatever. That's just like not how it works. I just want to understand how chemistry works. Like what in my brain or my body is saying like, this isn't the vibes, because like he was like, so my type in every aspect. I don't understand. Oh,
you know, well, check off the list by who's next.
There is no one next. Are we talking about guys in my life?
Yes.
There's no one. There's no roster. I've run out of the roster.
Okay. Okay, well, it means we need to start fishing again in the sea.
Yeah, I'll go fishing. You know, I like.
Or you also don't have to. Power to people who don't like. You don't have to at all. But
I mean, yeah. But like, as someone who has been perpetually single, like I am super comfortable being single and I love it. But I feel like I'm in a place in my life where like. I'm like ready for that next step. Oh my, okay. It's because I've been watching reality TV. I sound like a reality TV show. Like on 20 somethings, there was like, you know, and like I just couldn't find myself back home, but like in Austin, Texas, like this is like I came to like build my career.
Like, I know, I know.
But I do sound pretty optimistic. I think like I'm in a good mood from the new year, and like also getting to like being able to celebrate it with you guys in New York was like super special.
Oh, yeah, we celebrated together. I feel like New Year's was so long ago. It was literally a week ago and we were together. It was so fun. I hosted this really, really nice Shabbos. Everyone had to get a COVID test prior to coming. We had like really cute hats and blowers and like all that fun stuff. And then it was just like hors d'oeuvres. So I had like mini hot dogs and burritos, and we had dinner. Come to my house for Shabbos. It's always a party. And then
I really know how to throw
fireworks.
It was a really great adult party, and the pigs in the blanket made it. And just the drinking games also. Like I like how it was like a combo of adult party, but also like let's play drinking games. Like that was fun. Took me back to the college days.
Of course. Oh, of course. Beer pong has to always be in there. But I'm doing dry January, so I'm not drinking this entire month.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. You're crazy.
Yeah, it's actually like, it's like hard, but it's not hard. Like last night I went to a bar, but I got a, what is it, like a virgin cocktail?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I did that, but I was so stupid. I looked at the bill. We didn't ask how much it was, and it was $15 for a virgin mojito. Are you freaking kidding me?
No alcohol?
I was so pissed. I was so pissed. I should have asked.
New York is insane. Getting scammed.
I know.
Literally.
But we'll see what happens. I'm trying to be healthier. I'm trying not to drink as much.
Even on Shabbat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Even on Shabbos. I know. A new year, new me. Duh. LOL. Okay. Well, we have someone really special on today. His name's Ellie Weinstein. He is a psychologist. He's super great, and he'll be joining us very soon. Stay tuned. Woo-hoo. So we are here with Ellie Weinstein. He's a psychotherapist, podcast, and father. Ellie is a social work therapist who has worked in a psych hospital, outpatient clinics, and currently has a private practice. He created Ellievation to fill a need to help those in struggling times and add extra inspiration and motivation into everyday life. He has been featured on The Kelly Clarkson Show, Super Cool, IVF Warrior, Fruitful, and Breaking Taboo. Well, welcome, Ellie. We are so happy that you're here with us today.
Woo-hoo! Yay! How are you guys doing?
So good. So needed to talk with the therapist.
I love the name of your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I feel like my show, like The Dude Therapist, is like
so
people
cool.
Think it's all about dudes, but I'm just a dude who is a therapist. And I'm like, you know, there's the angry therapist, there's this name therapist. No one thinks the angry therapist is like an angry man. But
it's
like
funny.
Two Coach Girls is like really fun. I love that it's very cute, it's
Thank
very
you.
Wonderful. It fills a need that I think people need to hear. From normal people who are just talking about what it means to be a person. And that's really great.
Exactly. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. We have a lot of fun doing it.
You know what COSH stands for, right? Just checking.
COSH?
Yeah.
COSH. I don't know if I want to say just in case I'm wrong.
let's give it a go.
Kosher?
Yeah. Okay. Not everyone knows. Some people think it's two COSH girls. Okay. So we're all on the same
page. Oh, well, they're probably not Jewish, I feel like.
Kosh.
I don't know. Some views have gone wrong.
Is it like an acronym for posh, but kosh?
That's true.
Maybe that's what it is. You guys just two posh girls who are kosher, so it's two kosh. There you go.
But 10 points to you for getting it right. We're super excited to have you on. So just going to start with, how do you even get on this path? How do you get into psychotherapy? And I don't know, it just sounds like you were really driven towards it from the get-go. I don't know if that's true, though.
I agree.
Yeah, I've always been someone who likes to help people. I love to talk. I like to listen. Maybe I was born with really big ears. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. My spirit animal is Will Smith. We got the big ears, you know.
I love that.
Actually, once, I know this is a really random thing. When I worked in a psych unit, one of my first days, I had a client patient come up to me and say, "Oh my gosh, I know who you're related to." And I said, "Oh yeah, who?" They said, "Obama and Will Smith must be your cousins." I said, "Oh, why do you say that?" Now, I'm a white Jewish guy.
Yeah.
I don't mind being compared to two amazing
people,
no matter what their race or ethnicity is. And he's like, "Because you have the same ears." So maybe that was really why I was, you know, born into listening. And I'm not very intellectual in the way of like holding in a lot of memory. So doctor was out of the, I could not memorize things like that. And I was in undergrad in Turo, and I had a professor who was a psychologist, and he just got me into this wonderful headspace about what it truly means to be a therapist. He was an unbelievable inspiration, and I started looking into it, and I became a social worker instead of a psychologist because of the path of getting there is a little easier, and I'm not the best student. So I knew that I needed to find my strengths to be successful in the world instead of forcing myself into a situation that might not have worked out so great. And now I have private practice and trying to help people.
It's amazing. Oh my gosh. I've always kind of wanted to be a psychologist because I love helping people too. But I just wasn't sure like the schooling aspect for me. It turned me off. I know.
Like I know for me, like I'm really not good at standardized testing. Just not my thing.
No.
So for most PsyD programs, you have to take GREs. For social work programs, you don't. So I said, okay, one check for social work. It's cheaper. The programs are cheaper. It's less time. It's 2 years versus 5 to 7 years.
That's what I saw. Yeah.
And wow. Like, I'm a private therapist who does CBT, DBT, ACT, all the different acronyms for therapy. And I did 2 years of school plus 3 years of post-graduate school training. A psychologist does 5 to 7 years of school with training involved. Yeah. So it's apples and oranges regarding maybe the thought process and style that you're coming to someone with and the training in school. But a psychotherapist and a private therapist is the same thing. It's all about the person that's coming into that you're, you are at your office. Now, a PsyD, just to give any explanation, is a doctor. You're a doctor. You called a doctor. So you're taken more seriously in the medical world. In a hospital, you might get better raises and could be the head of a clinic. A doctor might be taken seriously, for example, if you want to work with the police department or fire department or government / sports teams or athletics. A doctor, they might only take psychologists versus an LCSW. But I can still do therapy better or on the same level as a psychologist. It's about me, not about my title. So just for anyone who's wondering which program to go and what to do, it's what name you want, what direction you go. Usually PsyDs are end up being professors because of PhDs and research. But in the end, it all helps. It's all about helping people.
You hacked the system and you made it work for you. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
And there are new hacks. There's like licensed mental health counselors. There's LMFTs, which is licensed marriage family therapists. They don't have to go to school for 20 years to help people.
Yeah. I don't think it's always needed. So I've always wanted to ask a social worker, a psychologist. Wait, is it psychologist, social worker? Like how
would you I'm a psychotherapist because I find it easier to call myself that than – or I call myself a therapist because when you call yourself a social worker, there's like this old school thought process that I must work for ACS and take people from away from their children. But I don't. I'm just a therapist. I just call myself a therapist.
Perfect. So in terms of that, I've always wanted to ask a therapist. You know, you hear people speak all day about – crazy things going on in their lives, maybe hurting themselves, traumas, all that stuff. How do you not have that affect your mental state? And how do you like realize this is work and this is my life? Because I feel like I would just be like, it'd be so hard. It's so sad.
Yeah. Thing. So who says I does? Who says I don't? Right.
Yeah.
So I think I'm a human and it does affect me. I remember one of my first days on the psych unit, I was working and I got to interview someone by myself for the first time who just came into the hospital. And they tried to kill themselves by jumping in front of a bus. And they had a whole plan from start to finish, the time of the bus. They knew the exact route. They knew exactly what they were going to do. It was so detailed. And they were just divulging all this really hard things to hear. And my jaw dropped to the floor. And I came out of it. And I said to my supervisor at the time, I'm going to give a shout out to Sally from the Valley, Sally Oshinsky. She was great. And she said, I said, how do you do this every day? And she said this line that I don't like. So no, sorry for Sally. She said, you just get used to it. And from that point on, I realized that I will never be that person who will just get used to hearing hard things. I don't want to be dehumanize the human side of what it means to deal with people. So it's hard. When I hear a teenager tell me they want to kill themselves and they're trying to cut themselves, sometimes after session, I will cry or I will be emotional or I will have to take a moment before my next session. Sometimes when I'm dealing with a couple and they are screaming and yelling at each other, I go to my wife that night and say, oh my gosh, I love you. You're the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
Right? It does affect me. But I have found the key to being a healthy therapist and dealing with human beings is learning how to take care of yourself because it does affect you. The day that it stops affecting me, I know that there's a problem because that means that I'm not really being there with a human.
Yeah.
I'm not being human with that person. So I go to the gym as best as I can. I love drinking tea. Tea is like a very calming thing for me. So I invest in loose tea. I read a lot of books. I spend time with family. I have found my formula that helps me with my self-care. And for some people, that's taking a long shower, maybe a certain cologne or a smell that makes them feel good, or like lighting a candle or listening to some music or a podcast. I don't know.
Yeah. But
everyone needs to find their thing. It's a great question. I love that question because it needs to be asked because we're not perfect. We're human.
It's a lot. I just think about what I talked to my therapist about. Actually, I had one, but then I ended it. But I just ran. I ended the relationship with sad because my benefits. I had to change benefits. I loved her, but it was just so expensive.
The biggest thing that just on that topic is the biggest thing that needs to happen for people to have good mental health treatment is accessibility, affordability, and a relationship with the person. if you can't afford it, now there are therapists out there in certain areas of the world that charge $300 to $600 a session out of pocket that you can maybe potentially get covered by your insurance by submitting something. If that works for you and you have the means and you really like the person, go for it. Have a good time. But if you don't, insurance, as a therapist, there is this like underlying thing that people think that if as a therapist you take insurance, you must be less than as a therapist. Having private pay means you're fancy or high end. Like, I take insurance and I don't take insurance so that people who need insurance to afford it can and get treatment. And for the people who want to pay out of pocket and don't want to use insurance because they don't take it and they can afford it, great.
Yeah.
But it's all about affordability and accessibility. If the person can't see you in the right time, if you don't like them, it doesn't work because it doesn't matter how high end they are or whatever their certifications are, or how many people said they're great. You need to be able to get there.
I found someone else who we didn't click and she used the insurance and I was like, ugh. So I might have to go back to my girl. We'll see. I need to figure it out budget wise, but it's just, it's so worth it. Okay. My personal rant.
So we saw on your Instagram that it says that you're specifically a relationship therapist and we talk a lot about relationships and dating and, you know, mostly me being single, Jory's in a relationship. We just wanted to hear a little bit more about that, like specifically being in couples therapy.
Yeah, it is. So a lot of therapists are really afraid to work in couples therapy and specifically in relationships. It's really hard work because you're not just dealing with the person in front of you. You're dealing with like 14 different scenarios because you're dealing with that person, this person, and their history of relationships and the other person's history of relationships.
Oh my gosh.
All coming into one beautiful session. And there are some times where it's really magical moment. And I say this in the most compassionate way when I start my sessions with couples for the first time. I say my job is not here to end a relationship or magically have fairy dust to protect the relationship with some fancy wand that I have. It's all about helping you with whatever you need to be helped. And you might not like how that goes. I'm not here to hurt. I'm here to help you. So if I see abuse, if I see bad patterns or unhealthy issues in the relationship, I will point them out because if I avoid them or not say anything, that doesn't help you. You don't have to like it. Therapy is never supposed to be this fluffy, lovey-dovey experience. It's hard. It's really difficult. And couples therapy is raw and real because you're two human beings trying to deal with each other. And no matter how much you love each other, there might be just some combative things that keep butting heads. And I didn't think I would ever, I love love. I'm married. I love romance. Yeah. I love relationships. I love relationships. I mean, I grew up on Disney. Who doesn't love love if you grew up on Disney, for sure. Right? I mean, Lion King, I mean, Ariel, I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Like that man, that shining armor, that experience of like, it's just beautiful, but it's so hard and it's difficult, but it doesn't have to be a chore or a burden. And I didn't know if I would actually ever get into this world. And the more I started working with individuals on their relationships, I'm like, okay, I need to get into couples work. And I love it. And not everyone does. And it's so hard and it's very taxing, but I find it very fulfilling as a therapist. And relationships are just so all over the place and amazing. And it's just such a puzzle to figure out how to help someone. So I find that really enjoyable for my perspective as a therapist. And there's so much research on it. I mean, you have such great research on what works, what doesn't work, what can work, what might work. It's just wonderful.
Do a lot of, couples that are classified as healthy, do a lot of them come to therapy also? Have you seen trans couples breaking up too? Or like,
yeah, I think a huge misconception about couples therapy is that you only go if like the crisis happens, the affair, the breakup, the cheating, the financial stress, the, oh my gosh, we have kids and we don't know how to deal with each other. I think actually the secret to couples therapy is that people should go when things are okay, because you need a space to vent because you're not perfect and the relationship will never be perfect because nothing's perfect. And I know I'm a huge fan of like seeing celebrities and people who are bigger than I am because I'm not a celebrity, maybe one day, hopefully one day, you know, manifest that. And Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell go to couples therapy. Why? Because they need a space to scream and yell and vent about the stresses of life, and they still love each other, and they're not in crisis, and they're not ending it, but two actors trying to figure out how to freaking take care of their life, as well as raising kids, as well as running their lives regarding their social media, their jobs, the ups and downs of being an actor, actress, being freaking frozen. I mean, that's a huge responsibility of being the new Disney, all that stuff. They need a place and a space to talk, and they're not in crisis. And they talk about this openly. And sometimes it's that objective person who goes, by the way, what you just said to Dax, or what you just said to Kristen, or what you just said to Bob, or what you said to Joe or Josephine, or whatever the heterosexual LGBTQ magic, whatever it is that's going on in the relationship, however the structure is, you might need an objective person to say, by the way, here might be a healthier way to say that so you get your point across and get heard. And nothing's wrong in your relationship, and you're not in crisis. And so that's what I believe is really, you're right. Most people go to couples therapy and think it's, I would say that I was recently talking to a colleague of mine about couples therapy. And I think the research shows that 70% of clients of couples therapy come when it's the last resort. How do you think that's going to go? Like when you're at the end of your line and you're putting all your hope into a person to save your marriage, it probably might not get saved. It doesn't mean that it can't be worked on and it's better, but you need to beat it. I think the research is that people wait 5 years longer than they need to actually get help in their relationship. I think it's either 4 or 5 years. I have to ask my friend, but it's, I think the research is 4 or 5 years. So you don't have to go when things are in crisis.
Question. Can you tell when you're meeting someone for a couple for the first time that this isn't going to work out, or like they,
I hate to admit it. I hate to admit it, but I'll use a research perspective. I'm not just being haughty and that I know things better than anyone else.
You do though. You have your experience. You know this stuff. You work with
there's a guy. There's an amazing mental health style and research called the Gottman Institute. They've been researching couples for 40 years. They have unbelievable books that are like the foundation of most couples therapists. Gottman Institute. Dr. John, and I forgot her name, but it's Dr. and Dr. Gottman. They're great. And if you want suggestions of books, you can text me afterwards and I can tell you the specific ones that are better than the other ones. And he says that they have a questionnaire that they give and that he can with, I think he writes with 90% certainty in the first 15 minutes of a conversation with a couple based on the questions that he's worked on for 40 years of research, that he can 90% pick up if it's going to work or not.
God. Okay, me and my boyfriend are doing this.
I don't know if the questionnaire is in there, but it's there's certain in the Gottman work and a lot of there's like the four horsemen of therapists of couple issues, right? They're the four horsemen of a death to a relationship. I hate to say it like that, or a destruction of a relationship, or a foundation that's not built on success. And if you hit those markers to an extreme consistently, it might not work. It doesn't mean that you are terrible people, right? It just means that the two of you might not be right for each other. So if I'm sitting in a couples session the first time and they're hitting those markers, my ears perk up or the hair in the back of my neck. I'm like, oh gosh, this is going to be interesting. How do I tell them, right? And it's a dance of giving myself and not my judgments the way of not helping them. But it doesn't mean that there's a part of me that goes, okay, this is going to be hard work. Like I remember I worked with someone, of course, I'm not going to say names and all that stuff, where there was a huge amount of affair and cheating. I mean, because of trauma, I'm not going to get into the details. It's just, it was hard for me to be the couples therapist for them. I got really pulled in emotionally, which was not healthy for me. And I honestly said after the first session, they're lying to themselves and this is not going to work out. This is really, it's abusive. It's unhealthy. It is, the patterns are just so aggressively negative. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to be there to help them if they want it. Right. So it's because it doesn't matter what I think, right? It doesn't matter if I think anything. It matters about the person.
If they can, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you'd never tell someone, I don't think it's going to work out between you guys. Like that's not, right? Like, you're just there to be a guide.
My job is not to advise and tell someone, by the way, you suck. Like, I'm not going to ever say that.
Yeah.
But I will, like, I have clients, so I do something maybe a little differently than other therapists where I'll have the couple session and I'll work with them, you know, together, and then I'll break them up for individual sessions focused on the relationship, not on their own issues, and get to hear their perspective devoid of the other person. And maybe they don't want to share because the other person's there. Maybe they're afraid or worried of the reaction, the judgment, what's going to happen. Maybe it's going to bring the patterns of the relationship that they really don't like into the couple session. So I work with them on the individual part. And there are times where I point out honest truths that I am giving honestly, that it's objective. The biggest thing that I have to remind myself is that I have no stake in the matter. It's not my life. I'm not here to get personal. I'm not here to take it personally. I'm here to take a step back and say, okay, here's what I'm observing, what I'm hearing, what I'm noticing. It's not that I have an opinion, because I don't have an opinion. I don't care. And I say that with the most love and compassion. Yeah. I don't care about you in the way that your family or your other people in your life do. And I still do care about you. That's the thing. I care about you, but I don't, because I'm going to help you. I'm here to help you, not just be, you know, dancing around honest truths. And if someone's ready to hear it, that's where the real work happens. When clients don't want to hear it, that's when they go, screw this. You suck. I'm done with therapy. And that's happened often where I say an honest truth that someone is not ready to work on something, not in a malicious way. I'm not trying to yell or scream or be mean, but with compassion and love. And they're like, sorry, I'm out, too much. And that's okay too.
It's hard. It's so hard to be vulnerable and like realize that like things might not work out, and it's really sad.
That's your life will change. The balance of love.
Yeah. Okay. So you brought up cheater a few times. So do you believe once a cheater, always a cheater? Like, you know how you hear that?
I would highly suggest reading Esther Perel.
Okay.
She is the forefront of the idea of infidelity and cheating. But do I think that once a cheater, always a cheater? It depends on why they cheated. Right. So if someone's looking for a good night or a couple of nights, you know, however much the cheating is, if someone's looking for an emotional connection because they're not getting it from their person, that can be very much shifted and adjusted and worked on to help the other person see that the other person needs you and you're not giving it to them. If someone just likes to have sex and have a good time, can I say that word? Can I say the word sex?
Yeah.
If someone's just looking for physicality and sex and the person that they're with is not enough, or they want to change things up, then maybe. But it's all about why, right? And the research shows that it really depends on the person and the pattern, how long and what's going on and what's bringing them to cheat. Because cheating usually doesn't happen just because. It happens for a reason, right? Someone's not getting enough in their relationship, or they're not satisfied. You know, there's actually a really cool thing. And these words are real. I promise. The words I'm about to use are actual real words. They sound really fake. There's a research study on the idea of people being maximizers versus satisficers. Right? Is good enough going to satisfy me to feel happy? So if someone's in relationships and they hit their markers of what they feel need, and they feel loved and respected and cared for and chemistry, they check off their box, I'm satisfied, which makes me happy. There are some people who are maximizers, that nothing will ever be good enough. They need perfection.
Yeah.
They need everything on their list. They need the certain hair type. They need the certain eyes. They need the body. They need the personality. They need the amazing in-law family or the siblings of the in-laws. They need the finances. They need everything. Same thing with buying a house, right? Do I buy a house and everything kind of, oh, I have all my needs. I have the amount of rooms, the space, and I can make it work. I'm satisfied. Or does it have to be exactly perfect, that nothing will ever fulfill my happiness? And if that's a person that you're in and that's cheating, then that's not even you. They're never going to be happy. So it really depends on the person. I know that went on a rant and tangent there.
All good. All good. Thank you. I appreciate you answering that.
Wow. Yeah, we really did a deep dive into relationships.
I needed to have my questions answered. My boyfriend's definitely listening to this podcast. We're going to make sure.
Always talk to me another time.
Yes, I will.
So as the single representative of this podcast, I have a question like for before the relationship stage. I don't know if this is your forte, but do you have any tips for our single listeners looking for love, because it can be a really exhausting process and I'm going through it myself right now. So for selfish purposes also, I'm asking.
Of course. I was single at one point. I mean, before I was married, I was single, and it's really hard. And I don't think that there's any exact like perfect thing I can say to make anyone who's been going through the depths of singlehood to make them feel any better, because no offense, it sucks. It's painful. It's hard to see other people in relationships having that fulfillment or having that person. Everyone deserves and wants to have their person. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful experience. I think the biggest thing is when you're in singlehood, how are you working on yourself to figure out who you are? And by finding out who you are, in turn, do you figure out what you need? Because finding out what you need is the biggest thing of then ending up with someone who fulfills those needs. Dating is a great experience to find out, oh, that does not work for me, or that personality type, that's what I want. And even though the relationship might end, you now get a better sense of what that person looks like for you and what your, maybe when I was younger, when I was like 18, 19, and I got back from, you know, yeshiva in Israel, and I was like, okay, here's everything I need. Here's everything I want. And I was so ridiculous in my list of like all the things. And then I finally ended up dating and I'm like, oh, here's exactly what I need for my happiness and my fulfillment. And then I met my wife and it clicked. And I was like, okay, I found what I need. This is great. Here's the other thing. The hard part about being single is everyone asking you, so are you single? All the other pressures and the people of like, when are you getting married? Oh, I have this. And family get-togethers, friend get-togethers, all the pressures that happen. It's about appreciating where you're at and knowing that, I have to say this, but being married or being in a relationship, if that's your only definition of happiness and fulfillment, it's a very hard place to be single, because there's part of being single where you can have a career, you can have a job, you can have your school, you can have friendships, you can have experiences and adventures of traveling and doing that someone who's married does not and can't. It doesn't mean you don't want to be in a relationship, but it doesn't mean being single has to be the death of your happiness and fulfillment of life. But when you have that person, then it's even amazing. It's amazing. And it's about being patient, because I've seen people who get married really young, who found their person, and it's terrible. And I know people who've gotten married in their 30s and 40s, who they finally found their person and they are the happiest they've ever been. The waiting is the hard part, because it's this torture. It's torture. It really is.
Yeah, especially, I'm going nuts.
I know, and especially during COVID, it's been ridiculous dating, and especially, and not to call out our wonderful culture and religion, being Jewish and the pressures of the world. You know, my wife and I went through an experience where we went through infertility, right? We had to go through IVF, and we had to for number one, and now for number two, that's due in a couple of weeks. There's parts of Judaism that are defined by like, if you're not in a relationship, how the hell do I get involved in a community? And if I'm not, and I'm married and don't have kids, how do I get involved? I feel left out. I'm always on the outs. It's a very big issue in the Jewish world that I cannot stand, that like that need to be married to be successful and fulfilled as a person and as a Jew and as involvement. And that to me bothers me as a human, as a therapist, and as a married person, that like, it's okay where you're at. And then you get to the next stage and it's okay where you're at then, and the next stage and you're okay where you're at then. And it's about appreciating that progress. And also just from a therapeutic thing, it's okay to hate it and be in the suck and be pissed off and be frustrated. That's okay too.
Embrace the suck.
You deserve those feelings and they're real and valid. And that is real and no one can tell you otherwise.
Okay. Well, thank you for being super honest. No, I do appreciate it. And I'm also happy that you brought up, you know, aspect of also being in the Jewish community, because being part of the community is very focused on getting married and family life. So, and it's something that we've also talked about on this podcast too.
Yeah, like, yeah. I have friends who are not married yet, and people are like, is everything okay with them? Is something wrong with them? Oh my gosh. It's like, no, nothing's wrong with them. They're great people. They just haven't found their person yet, or they haven't found the right, or maybe they're not, maybe they're still working on themselves to get ready for that person. But that first jump to like, oh, poor them. Oh, they're not married yet. Oh, like relax. It's okay. They're okay. You're okay. If you don't see them having grandkids yet, you're going to be fine. Like, relax, take a deep breath. Like, there's nothing. We jump to the, oh my gosh, something's wrong with them because they're not married. Because marriage equates perfection, happiness, fulfillment in the world somehow.
I know.
And it's not always true.
It's not. It's a lot.
It's not fair. A lot.
It's like, I was thinking that too to myself. Okay, get married, my life will start. You know? But no, it's not. My life's already started. It's going. Yeah.
It's going.
It's not. That's not how it has to be. Okay. So tell us about Elevation.
Yeah. So that started because when I was in grad school, I felt the need to share more, talk more about mental health. And I'm so glad the website's taken down and I have a real good website because it was basically an explosion of my ADHD brain of like color, noise, big pictures, no pictures. I didn't know what I was doing. But thank you to Renina Lifshitz who changed my perspective and did all the work for me because I suck at that. Not my thing. But Elevation started because I wanted to brand myself of being a public speaker, an inspirational person for mental health and relationships. And now Elevation is just my platform for speaking. So that's just what it called. Before I was a licensed clinical social worker having a private practice and working for myself, that was like my thing, my side hustle business. But now that I have my practice, Elevation is now just part of it, which is my speaking opportunities and gigs. I feel the need for male voices in the mental health world. There are not a lot of male therapists that speak out and speak up about mental health. Beautifully, the mental health world is very much female, and that's wonderful. I love that. We all need perspectives and diversity in a place that like mental health and anything that we do. So it started for that. I'm like, hey, I don't see anyone like me talking about feelings and emotions and vulnerability and relationships. And then it was, oh my gosh, I had a panic attack as a father. Let me talk about this. And I talk about that. And then, oh my gosh, I went through infertility before being a father. No men are talking about infertility and how much it sucks and the pain.
That's really amazing. So
just built off of that idea of just sharing more and being more and maybe giving a voice and helping people be seen that look like me or are like me or have the same gender as me. I don't know.
That's
great. Or anyone.
I mean, so going off of that, is that why you felt the need to start a podcast also?
Yes. So like I said, I have ADHD. So sometimes I get really bored with what I'm doing, even though I'm doing funny. It's like that I'm not doing enough. I'll be the first one to admit that I'm driven by, oh my gosh, I'm not doing enough. Also was during COVID.
Me too.
And I'm like, oh, wow, I have this magical time somehow, which I didn't. And I also am I'm a better speaker and interviewer than I am a writer. So thinking of even writing blogs, I have a few, but blogging or writing a book gives me so much anxiety and fear that I don't do it, even though I know I can if I just sat down and did it. So I said, okay, let me talk. So I invested in that. I love meeting new people. I love networking. And I've met some unbelievable mental health professionals and wellness people. I've collaborated, connected with unbelievable, cool people. I've had the guts to ask people and just say, hey, would you like to be on the show? That I would never have thought of, like Justin Baldoni or like Dax Shepard. I asked. They haven't answered. Don't worry. I'm waiting. But like I have Apollo Ono, who's an Olympic athlete, coming on my show at the end of this week.
Amazing.
Why? Because I asked. And I said, would you like to? And it took a year and a half to schedule it because he's a big deal. And it just made me feel very appreciative of getting those yeses. It's like an ego thing. But as well, it's just giving a different flavor of a voice of mental health that, like I said, dude therapist. I'm a dude who happens to be a therapist. And I have all walks of life coming on the show. And it's really just became a passion and hobby of mine.
That's great.
That if I can do it for the rest of my life, which I doubt I can, I would love to do and get paid for it if I could.
Right.
But for now, I really just enjoy talking with people and it's connected me and open people like yourself to reach out and have me on. So why not? Why not?
Exactly. Awesome. Howie, how long have you been doing it for?
2 years, but I'm on my third season.
How long
Don't you have okay. So I'll tell you the honest truth. I started and thought no one is going to want to be on the show and no one's going to answer. So I started doing my own things and I realized, oh my gosh, to come up with my own content every week, I can't do that. I just can't. So I started reaching out to people, and people started saying yes more than I ever expected. So because of that, if I would be having single week episodes, I would have episodes recorded and edited till the end of 2023, beginning of 2024. So I got really into it. I got really intense. So yeah, that's my thing, ADHD, just like go all in. But in reality, it just got really exciting for me. And even now, the fact that my wife's due in a couple of weeks, I'm jamming January with so many recordings, like six a week, so I don't have to think about it. It's done. And I did not think people would say yes. So why do I have two a week? Because too many people said yes, and I didn't want to wait 3 years to have them on the show.
That's amazing.
So I was like, let's just put them in. Who cares? And I have no rules. So if it's once a week, twice a week, if it's three times a week, if it's seasons are could be a whole year. If I want to cut off a season mid-year, I'll do it. I don't care. There's no rules.
How many episodes are each season?
It depends on how many episodes you want to do a week or how many you want to do a month. Okay. Some people do.
No, for you, but like, what do you do?
Oh, for me, I was hoping it would be 52 episodes, but it ends up being like between 70 and 80 a year.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Your schedule is booked.
I don't know how you do it.
Well, I'll be honest. Once you go private practice, you're not seeing 40, 50 people a week. You're seeing like 20, 25 people. And if your kid's in daycare and you have, and I don't work on Fridays. I work Monday through Thursday like a dog, and Fridays I don't. So I do recordings on Fridays, and the hours that I have off, I just, and I batch record.
And you edit too?
As minimal as possible. I literally just pop it in GarageBand, amp up the sound a little bit, improve the voices. If someone mumbles or humfles or whatever the word is, I'm not here to
sound good. It sounds just like
putting it out there and not stressing about if it's perfect or not, because I honestly could care less if it's perfect, because if someone doesn't like it because of that, don't listen. And if you like it, great.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure everyone listens to the Dude Therapist. Perfect. On Spotify. And where else can we listen?
And now on Apple. And now you can rate on Spotify as well now.
Oh.
It's a new thing that Spotify just added.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
Well, shout out to you guys. Go on there. Rate your own shows.
Yeah, we will. Tell everyone.
5 stars. Also like, oh my gosh, highest rated show.
I will definitely do that.
Because you just keep rating yourself, you know?
Perfect.
I tried, by the way. You can only do it once. I tried.
Oh, darn it. That's exactly what we're going to do.
Look at all of our friends. WhatsApp group, put it on Facebook, on our Instagram. So another question. So you literally just said this though. You're super busy. Like, how do you stay organized? How do you stay being a husband who's there, a great dad, but also, a therapist and have a podcast? Like, is there something you specifically do to stay organized?
A shared calendar on iCal.
Okay. Right?
My wife and I have a shared calendar. So we have different colors for different things. My wife thought of this. She's like, I don't know what you're doing when. We need to figure this out. By the way, she's amazing. Shout out to my wife, Ariella. And so, like, certain colors are my podcasts. Now, I will try not to do podcasts at certain times when I'm with my family. So I don't see clients or do podcasts from the hour of, like, 5:30 to 7:30. Because that's when my daughter comes home, my wife comes home, and we're, like, in crunch time of, like, eating together, enjoying time together, and really just spending time together, you know, shower, bath,
go to bed,
all the cuddles and love. But it also means that I'm very organized in what I do and how I do it. And I also get lost sometimes and spend too much energy and get burnt out. And I then go, what the heck am I doing? I'm working too hard. So I'm not perfect. So I do make mistakes by overbooking my week. And I can look at my week right now and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing that. But I do say that the podcast energizes me for my therapy practice. And my therapy practice energizes me for my podcast. And my family is always an energy that's positive, even though it's hard and it's life. But like Sundays, I don't really do a lot of recordings except for
being on
other people's show. I don't record on my show because that takes more effort for me to like plan and prep. But for other people, I'll do it. And I don't know about you guys and how religious you are. I'm not going to make any assumptions. But for me, Sabbath is really a massive rest. Even though sometimes I feel that if I didn't keep Sabbath, I could be at conferences and summits and speaking and getting more connection. Right? There's a part of that part of me of influencer thought process. But like that's my rest where I spend with my family and recharge.
If we didn't have it, I don't know what I would do.
I don't know about you guys. As a kid, you probably hated it, right?
I loved it.
I don't know, as a kid, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want to play and be in my videos.
You have ADHD. My brother's the same way.
Right. But then when I got older as an adult, specifically when I hit college, I felt so blessed to have Sabbath to like too. Really stop and like turn my phone on. Now, sometimes I have to leave my phone on because of emergency cases and just, you know, just to be reached, which thank God I've never gotten called. But like that idea of taking a moment and just not. But like the second Shabbos is over, like it's back to the grind. Like I'm back on Instagram, back doing things.
For sure.
And it's really about, I will say this, I recently listened to something by Jay Shetty, who's an awesome like mindfulness Buddhist guy. He said that it's not about the time you spend, it's about how you spend your time. So for me, it's that if I can give 30 minutes of 100%, it's about being aware of where I'm giving my energy and learning where I need to recharge my energy throughout the day. If that means taking a nap, if that means making sure I go to the gym twice a week or three times a week, if that means spending time with family and saying no or rescheduling something.
Saying no.
Not feeling bad about saying no or rescheduling something.
That has been my hardest thing. Saying no. I've been doing it. It makes me feel like.
How many times did we reschedule because things came up?
I know.
That's okay. That's fine because it didn't work. Travel, kids, life. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And if someone's not okay with that and they're like, sorry, I can't do it then. I'm sorry. Then we'll do it next time. And, you know, it's okay. It's about being cognizant of your energy within your schedule. And I am busy, but I like being busy because when I see my schedule open with all the white spots on iCalendar, it gives me anxiety that I'm not doing enough. So I'd rather have things on my calendar throughout the day, whether it's not every hour. I'm not like literally going back to back with craziness, but it's knowing that I'm being productive, that by the end of the week, I can look at my week and go, I did something. And that's just something for me that I need for myself and for my mental health. That if I had just nothing, my wife would laugh because my Sundays are really lazy where I sit and do nothing, but like my week is not. And yeah. I value the time that I do put my energy into something. And I also value my breaks for myself as well.
Yeah. That's great.
Sounds like productivity. Really, you're like, really hard questions. Productivity like drives you.
Yeah. That if you want to be my therapist, yes, it does.
Do you have a therapist?
I have on and off over the years. I'm very pro. It was just very hard for me at first to admit that I needed to get help as a therapist. I'm like, I should be able to figure this out.
Oh, really?
But I got help. I take anxiety medication. You know, I'm on a very low dose anxiety medication.
We all do.
Because we have to. I have to. And, you know, being a parent and a therapist can be anxiety inducing. And I needed to function and I wasn't. I wasn't functioning. I was just not okay. So I needed to be okay. And there's no shame in taking medication. I think there was the TikTok trend where like all these TikTok therapists, Instagram, like had their like a pill on their tongue and went like I'm a therapist or mental health professional and I take medication too. Like trying to break that stigma.
Good.
But yeah, you got to take care of yourself. And productivity does drive me. It does very much so. I'm very much a driven person on like doing and being and making a splash and an impact.
Right. So you're killing it with time management, which is actually one of my New Year's resolutions. And we were just talking about New Year's resolutions, I think, on the last episode. And do you think making New Year's resolutions is even realistic? Like, how do you even stick to them? I've been sticking to them. I've been in quarantine in Israel for the first week. And I'm like, oh my God, you're killing it. And then I realize it's like still January. So, yeah, like what are your tips for actually sticking to them like throughout the whole year?
Do they work?
You want to know my real take on New Year's resolutions?
Okay, yeah.
I really do believe that New Year's resolutions is a pressured situation to make change when you can change at any point throughout the year.
Okay.
Right? It is like a really nice thing. Oh, the new year's starting. Let's start on a good foot, right? Statistically, most New Year's resolutions end by February, mid-February. Like that, I want to lose weight. I want to go to the gym. I want to be nicer. I want to be happier. All those things are not sustainable because they're so big.
Pressure.
My biggest thing, I try not to pressure myself to change just because other people feel the need to do change. Like the difference between December 31st and January 1st is a day. The difference between 2021 to 2022, there's no fairy dust that now makes this year better than the next or the last. We hope it is, right? With all the COVID and the craziness and the life that we've been through the past couple of years, we hope 2022 will be better. But it doesn't mean it will be just because the calendar flipped. It takes us. So one of the biggest things I will say about New Year's resolutions to make them stick is to not pressure yourself to stick to them as strict as possible. So for example, the classic one, a diet, right? My wife's a dietitian. We're very into like intuitive eating versus like fad diets and stuff like that. But a diet per se, let's say you want to lose a couple of pounds to make yourself feel better. If that's sustainable, great. Mm-hmm. But let's say you fail. I hate that word, but let's say you falter and you mess up.
Yeah.
Does it mean then you're done for the rest of the year?
It's gonna hurt. Still,
let's look at February 15th as like the midpoint of where statistically where things end. You still have a 10 and a half months left of your year. Do you now go, oh, sorry, the year's over. Let's wait till next New Year's. No, give yourself time to recover. Give yourself some love. Give yourself some grace and compassion. And when you're ready, start it up at any day that you would like.
Yeah.
So time management's really hard. So I'm a big fan of timers and my schedule and reminders on my Apple Watch or whatever phone or thing that you do to keep yourself consistent. And if you can't, maybe make the constrictions and the resolution a little lighter for you to actually be successful, because it's better mental health wise and just productivity wise to be successful with a smaller goal than continuously fail at a big goal. Because then you remind, oh, I got this. I can do it. I can do it. And then a couple months in, when you're feeling consistent, add a little bit more, just a little bit, just a little extra tweak. So if it means like people do like, don't be mean for an hour a day. Okay, great. So for that hour, you finally be successful. Now up it to 2 hours. It means be nicer to the secretary or the person at your work. Okay, great. You do that person and then you're doing really well. Now the next person, let's say it's just about starting small and building upon it. And if you do falter on that small, it's not going to be a huge change to your life. But if you make this massive goal of I need to lose 50 pounds this year and you don't, you're going to fail. It's just not practical.
I want to lose I want to lose 10 pounds and then 10, another 10
pounds. Whatever it is. Yeah. This month, I would like to lose a pound, something.
Yeah.
Or I want to at least start going to the gym more. Not a specific 3 times a week. Because what if something happens? Because life happens. COVID happens. Sickness happens. Health happens.
Yeah.
And you end up going once a week. Are you now a failure because you didn't go 2 to 3 times a week? You're not. But now you think you're a failure because you set that rule of 3. And now you didn't go 3. So now you suck.
I do that to myself all the time. I always am going to be like, I'm going to run 4 or 5 to 3. I'm a runner. So I'm like, I'm going to run this X amount of times a week.
I don't understand you right now because you're a runner. I'm sorry.
And I'm like, I have to do it this day. And I don't do it. And I'm like, I didn't run when I was supposed to run. I'm a failure. I can't get in this race. Like,
rules are really great because it helps us feel like we're in control and we're not. So if we make those real massive rules and strict, so become so restrictive of ourselves. So I love New Year's resolutions if done right and we don't have pressure to change because it's New Year's.
Okay. Yeah.
Because we can change and we can start working on something January 3rd if we feel necessary or mid-December. But it's like this this massive pressure to post a New Year's resolution, to show a New Year's resolution, to share New Year's resolutions, when in reality – it all matters about ourselves and how we make those small tweaks to ourselves. Yeah.
That's why I'm keeping it to myself.
Good.
And all of our followers. Oh, well. Well, thank you so, so very much for coming on the podcast today. We really appreciate it. You give us such great insight. So many
things. This episode was one big hug for me.
It was.
Oh, well, I'm always here for big hugs. I'm a hugger.
You're like, okay. So,
if you ever need more hugs, just reach out on social media, chat with me, talk with me. Here's what I'll say. Now that I was on your show, we are now family. So whether you like it or not, whether you like it or not, you now have access to me to reach out to me and say, hey,
thank you.
Whether it's just a quick thing or another thing, you can reach out and get my phone number, my email, whatever you need. We're now a family, whether you like it or not. And you can totally, you know, end our relationship and be like, this guy's my wacky uncle. I never want to talk to him again. Or I can be a good guy in your family and hopefully we'll have a long relationship. And I really love what you guys are doing because to have, especially in the Jewish world, to have young female voices promoting positivity and honesty about being single, being in relationships, being human, taking medication, all those things and resolutions, all the things you guys are trying to do is so important. And I think it's extremely valued. So keep at it and don't stop. It doesn't matter how many downloads you get. It doesn't matter how many likes you get. It doesn't matter how many views you get. As long as one person's listening, that makes a difference. Okay.
Thank you so much. We really
appreciate it. I struggle with that so much. I hate the following thing kills me. I'm like, oh, I just want 5 more. I want 10,000 more. Like, oh, wait, only 100 listens? Oh, like,
just, come on. This took so much time. No, I get you. So where can our listeners find you?
Sure. So my website is ellieweinsteinlcsw.com. And my Instagram is ellieweinstein_lcsw. And you can check me out at The Dude Therapist or The Dude Therapist Podcast on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all the ones that it's shared on automatically. Thank God for Buzzsprout. Anytime, anywhere you reach out, I will try my best. I am not one of those people who don't answer messages and texts. I'm nobody. So it's great. So just reached out to me. I'm not that famous.
No.
I don't have a lot of bombardment of messages. So anytime, anywhere, just reach out. And if I can't help you, I'll really do my best to help someone with I can to help them get help.
Perfect. We're going to tag you in everything to make sure that you get all the followers and views and listens.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Please feel free to follow us at Two Kosh Girls on Instagram and email us with any questions or concerns at twokoshgirls@gmail.com. And always listen to our episodes every 2 weeks on Spotify, Apple Music, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you.